You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com. Hello, everybody. I'm Nadira Jamal, the Belly Dance Geek, and welcome to episode 44 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. The Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, so things like moves and combinations and choreography, it's really easy to find resources. But if you're looking for help with the why and the how, so things like musicality, culture, business, mindset, composition, that can be a little bit harder to get. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different geeky topic, and we always have plenty of time for questions so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. So my guest tonight is Zahra Zuhair. International performer, workshop instructor, and choreographer, Zahra is world-renowned for her knowledge, authenticity, and dedication to the art of Middle Eastern dance. Raised in Rakhshaki from a young age, Zahra is known for her musicality and elegant style. She's trained and influenced many of today's international stars. She began a specialization in an Egyptian dance with her first study tour to Egypt in 1979, studying with Cairo's top teachers. Zahra has had the good fortune to see firsthand four decades of the great dancers of Egypt. She's continued her study and love of Egyptian dance and conducts study tours to Egypt as well as Morocco and Turkey. She's also the artistic director of the Gazella Dance Company and has written, directed, and choreographed theater productions intertwining Middle Eastern stories and dance under the name Ponana Dance Theater, loosely meaning a blend of many things, since 1997. Her productions include Leila and Majnun, The Veils of Inanna, Caravan of Secrets, Tapestry, and Journey in Search of the Divine. Los Angeles, California has been Zahra's home base since 1984, where she's been one of LA's most esteemed teachers for many years. Her always evolving style keeps students, old and new, coming back for more. And you can check her out at zahrazuhair.com. That's ZahrazuhairAir.com. And she's also on Facebook as Zahra Zuhair Dance Artist. And today, Zahra is going to talk about the power of the positive dancer. And I'm so excited to have her because if you were here before the call, you may have heard us chatting about when we were at the MECTA Professional Dance Conference and Retreat. And she taught a session on that that really made a big difference in my life and my dance career. So welcome, Zahra.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. Why don't you tell us about how you got started in belly dance?
Well, I started in the early 1970s, and my mom actually got interested in it. It was a huge fad at that time in America, and I kind of went along for the ride, but I'm the one that got, like, really hooked into it. So I've been doing that ever since. I was a teenager, so it's been an amazing journey for me.
Wonderful. And can you tell us about why you took an interest in positivity specifically?
I realized very early on in my development as a dancer that dwelling on anything negative related to my dancing was just exhausting to me. Even listening to idol gossip by other dancers or anything like that, or just my own self, my negative self-talk or anything like that, was just draining. And I knew if I really wanted to move forward in my dancing that I had to keep a more positive mindset and try to create a more positive environment around myself. And it's something I've worked on for many, many years. It was something I continue to work at.
All right. Now, when we talk about being a positive dancer, what does that mean?
I think it's basically it's very much about how we conduct ourselves in the dance community, how we present ourselves professionally, even as a student, how we conduct ourselves in a class or at an event is very important. I think we should all try to be supportive and treat each other the way we want to be treated. And I think sometimes we forget that. We get so involved in ourself and in our own head that sometimes we forget to be courteous to other dancers and be more courteous of people's space.
And
So
why is it important that we be positive? What do we have to lose from negativity?
I think being in such a beautiful art form of any kind is such an amazing experience. And dance is such a beautiful journey. I mean, it really enriches our entire mental and physical being. You have to put your whole heart and soul into it. And, really, why would anyone want to turn that into a negative experience? You have to ask yourself that when negativity starts creeping up on you. Being positive is something we have to constantly work at. I think just in our daily lives, but especially if you're working on yourself in an art form, it's hard to stay focused on moving forward and staying on track with our dance goals. It's so easy to get distracted and discouraged. That's why removing ourselves from negative people or situations is really important for our emotional well-being. And as artists, it's also important to surround ourselves with, like more positive, like-minded, supportive people. No situation is ever perfect, but we can strive to create a more harmonious, creative environment for ourselves so we can enjoy and thrive in our art form.
And I think it's very interesting that you use the word distract when you were describing this. One of the things that I learned both in your talk that you gave all those years ago, but also in the interview that you did before the event, was that often things that we do, whether it's getting involved in a forum thread or these days it would be a Facebook thread, often that feels like doing something positive, but it's still dwelling on something negative, like being outraged about something somebody said. And we feel like we're doing something good when we're really dwelling on something that's negative, and that can really steal time from being artists.
Exactly. It's about staying focused and not the distractions are around us constantly. We're constantly being distracted by a lot of things in our life. And it's so hard to kind of move forward as an artist. And we start to sweat the small stuff and not stay focused on what our goals are. And I think that's just something that we're constantly working at and something that constantly has to be worked on. And that's been difficult for me. It's always a conscious effort, and I'm always mindful of not sweating the small stuff and trying to stay focused on my goals. And there's so much to do, really, in dance, if you want to be good at it and you want to accomplish the things you want to accomplish. And there's distractions constantly all around us. So that's a big part of staying positive is trying to stay focused.
I feel like sometimes, positivity or positive thinking gets spun as always being cheerful and pretending that there's no problem and ignoring any realistic issues. But what do you think being positive looks like when people are going through hard times or have serious things to address?
Well, we all have bad days or go through hard times. I mean, we live in the real world. We all have problems. Keeping a positive attitude is nearly it's impossible. At times. Sometimes we just have to feel bad and be okay with that. But I think we can use adversity to our advantage. Maybe we can see it as a way to grow and learn and become a stronger human being. We have to deal with problems in our life, but we can. I think being proactive is also key. It's okay to allow yourself to feel bad for a while. Then you have to quit feeling sorry for yourself and find ways to heal from the hurt or find a solution to the problem. And that in itself are very positive actions. And possibly even help others in a similar situation. I think I mean, we all have problems and we have to deal with that. Of course, we can't be positive all the time. That's not realistic. That's, we can't just walk around with rose-colored glasses on. We live in real life. But I think, you can put a positive spin on things. You just don't have to dwell on the negative. We have to just move on. If I'm feeling bad, I allow myself that. We're just human beings. But I think you can put a positive spin on things, use it to your advantage, use it to grow and learn.
Now, I know that one of the biggest sources of negativity in any artist's life is comparing yourselves to others. Why is it that you think we do that, and why do we do it so much?
Yeah, it's hard to, I think it's hard to see ourselves as unique individuals. I think a lot of times we feel we need to measure our progress by how others are doing because we don't trust that what we're doing is good enough. Not just in dance, but in general, a lot of times in life. I just think it's hard for us to see ourselves. And if we could stand back and look at ourselves like other people, maybe we wouldn't feel that way. But I think it's just we're compelled to just compare ourselves to other people. I think it's normal, but for some people, it, especially in an art form, when you're learning a dance form or you're continuing to grow in a dance form, where you're surrounded by people performing, and I think it's just normal to want to compare yourself to other people to see how you're doing. But that can be a dangerous thing because it can really cause feelings of inadequacy. And like we just don't measure up.
And what are some of the consequences of feeling that? How does that play out in our lives or our dance lives?
Well, I don't. I think it probably it can really hinder our progress a lot. That's where keeping a healthy self-image comes in. Negative self-talk is so detrimental to a dancer or to anyone for that matter. When you feel you're not good enough and you're constantly comparing yourself to others, there's no way to grow. You end up either just copying someone else and stunting your own growth or feeling inadequate and unable to move forward. I don't think it's always a bad thing, but, it's hard to get it into perspective.
Mm-hmm. I know that, and for the record, I am a perfectionist in recovery. I know that one of the things that I always used to latch on to about, comparing myself to other people and not feeling good enough was that I felt like that gave me the drive to improve. But what I found is that I improved a lot more when I stopped doing that quite so often. Like the more
right.
I let go of that and started, approaching this from love, as opposed to from feeling like I'm not going to be good enough and people are going to discover it if I don't, get this done. That's when I started showing up to do the work on a much more regular basis because I wasn't, I wasn't doing that just to make myself feel a little bit better temporarily, but because that's what I wanted to do as a dancer.
Right. Yeah. I think as students, maybe normal to, it's a normal way to kind of measure our progress. We kind of aspire to be like our teachers. I think that's a normal process, but at some point we do need to let go of that. And you need to show up and do the work. You need to, stop comparing yourself at some point. But I think it's a process that we all go through, and it's important to recognize that.
And are there any particular ways that we can stop comparing ourselves to others or do it in healthier ways?
Well, that's interesting. I read an article by Martha Graham about that very subject, and her analogy was like being a kid in grade school and the teacher handing out an assignment and telling the class to keep their eyes on their own paper. And on the surface, the message is like learning not to cheat, but the deeper meaning is about doing your own work. It's important what you have to say. How someone else's answer compares to yours isn't the point. The assignment is yours to complete. And I think it's like that in dance or in life in general. Every day you have a blank sheet of paper you get to write your name on and go, and you get to fill out the paper with what you want to say. If your work doesn't meet somebody else's expectations, it's none of your concern. The way someone else perceives what you do as a result of their own experiences, which we can't control. We can't control what people think. It's important to do the work and fall in love with the process and not to judge the outcome.
And that's hard. It's really hard, but it helps.
It's easier said than done. It's a constant work in progress. I think it's a conscious effort every day. I think we have to constantly relearn that and tell ourselves that every day.
And I really appreciate that you've been reinforcing, you know, that it's not something that you just flip a switch and it's fixed. I know that certainly
never.
Hasn't been my experience, but it's still really valuable. You know, you mess up, you do better, you mess up, you do better, and it still pays
right.
off.
Right. We're
I think that's one of the
journey.
Perfectionist traps is when you start, you know, trying not to be a perfectionist, you become a perfectionist about not being a perfectionist.
Right.
But I think I cut you off when you were saying something.
Oh, no. It was just more of the same. It's true. It's just something we constantly have to keep reminding ourselves. It's not, like you said, you can't just flick the switch and change that. I think it's something, especially in today's world, I think with the kind of media we have today, it's in our face all the time. And it's hard not to think, gosh, you know, it's easy to think you're not measuring up, you know, and it's really hard not to compare yourself.
Well, that's a great segue into my next set of questions. You know, you're somebody who has been in the dance community, you know, before there was any social media or internet, in kind of the early days when we had forums and all these private spaces to talk. And then also now that we've mostly moved on, you know, to more public discussions like Facebook, you know, so, you know, what role have you seen in social media in how dancers feel about their dance and about each other and their mindsets?
I think social media is amazing. It's what's happening now. The entire global dance community is at our fingertips. It's so easy for anyone to find teachers and keep up with events. It's really incredible. I think it has a lot of positive points about it. I mean, it's really amazing. I mean, as you said, I was dancing in the days before internet. I mean, the only thing we had back when I started was dance publications. You had to subscribe to dance publications and, you know, you could advertise in a magazine and we had snail mail. We did snail mailings or advertise in local newspapers for classes, but it was very difficult to get information out there. I mean, we did it. today it's just amazing. I mean, with that instant global communication we have, you can just put anything out there or find any information. It's really great.
And, you know, what are some of the downsides of that availability?
The downside of it is, I think, number one, it's a big time waster. It's easy to kind of go down that rabbit hole, and it's hard to get out when you go on Facebook or YouTube. It's really, and it can be kind of draining. I think a lot of people, that's another reason a lot of people start comparing themselves to others. Rather than seeing it as promotion and people putting out their publicity, I think it starts to really kind of overwhelm some dancers, like, oh my gosh, I'm not doing enough, I don't have beautiful costumes like that, I don't measure up, I can't, like, oh my god, you know, it can really get in your head, because I've had a lot of people tell me that, and my advice is you have to limit your time on that. I mean, you can't go down that rabbit hole and not get out. It's especially YouTube. YouTube is an amazing thing, and it has a lot of positive things about it. You can see dancers from all over the world, and even in different eras. Anything you want to see, it can be very inspiring and educational. But the downside of it now is what I call the copycat syndrome. People are starting to look alike because they copy the same famous dancers. And you can see the dancers that they're studying on YouTube. It's really a little disturbing to me. I think it goes back to, again, to comparing ourselves to others and not feeling like our work is good enough. Too many dancers are becoming copies of what they see on YouTube. And it's a balance we have to find. You know, it's just some kind of balance we have to figure out. How do you be entertained, be inspired, but don't let it overwhelm you and take up all your time when you should be doing your own work and spending the time practicing or going to class. You know, I think people are also using YouTube rather as a learning tool. It can be a learning tool, but you really need live class. You know, dance is a physical art. You really need bodies. You need to be in a room with bodies. It's always going to be that way. And I just think that there's kind of this balance we have to try to find with the kind of medium we have today.
Now, you've mentioned, you know, limiting the amount of time that you spend on it. Do you have any tips around, you know, kind of prejudging what kinds of things are going to be helpful for you or things that are likely to just drag you down and get you sucked into the rabbit hole or steal your energy?
You know, I think it's about getting it into perspective and setting your own kind of boundaries and rules. Like, what am I getting out of this? You have to ask yourself, what am I on this? Why am I on Facebook? What am I looking for? If you just want to see what people in the community are doing, that's great. But set a timer. If you're looking for classes, look for the classes, set a timer, give yourself a limit. If it gets overwhelming or discouraging or takes too much of your time, you need to get off. You don't let yourself get swept away in it. Use it for information, for inspiration, or to promote your classes, or however it can be productive for you. Then get off. You have work to do. You need to keep your eyes on your own paper and your own work. It's hard. It's very hard because we've all been there. You get sucked in. And it's hard to get off. And before you know it, 15, 20 minutes, a half hour goes by, and you're like, oh my gosh.
That's a good day for me.
Yeah. Oh, I'm saying 15, 20 minutes. I mean, hours. You can get sucked away for hours. It's just, I mean, if you think about that amount of time wasted, you could be a super dancer if you put those hours to, you know, good use.
Yeah, 15 minutes, half an hour of practice actually is a whole lot.
It's huge. I tell my students that all the time when they tell me they don't have time to practice. And I say, if you don't have 10, 15 minutes, you don't have a life. You're doing something wrong. How much time do you spend on social media watching other people dance? You need to spend that time dancing. It's 5 minutes is huge. You know, it's better than doing nothing and sitting and watching somebody else. Not that you can't learn by watching somebody else. We do learn. But there's a limit to that. You've got to move. We do it. This is a physical art form. You need to physically practice. We need to dance, not watch.
Now, one of the things I remember from the interview that you did with Julie Eason before the Mecta retreat was I remember that you mentioned a graceful way to exit an online discussion that's taking up too much of your time. I don't know if you remember any of that, but I would love to hear those tips because they really helped me a lot.
I think, especially an online discussion, if you sometimes that can take up a lot of your time, or if it starts to become a little negative or overwhelming, I think it's fine to, excuse yourself in a polite way. You can, you have we're all busy people. There's no reason not to excuse yourself, and because you have to practice, you have to teach, you have to take care of a lot of things in your life. You can do that in a very polite way. There's also a way you can also, if a discussion is negative, you can diffuse a situation by saying something. By putting a positive spin on it, or just simply, changing the subject. There's a lot of ways you can gracefully get out of a discussion. Were you talking about a more negative discussion or just a more of a time-wasting type of
I would say
discussion?
either, but usually it's the negative ones that I need to use that on the most.
I think it's probably my thing is I try to diffuse situations by putting a positive spin on something, or trying to or even trying to direct the conversation in another direction without abruptly just changing the subject, because that doesn't necessarily work. But I think sometimes a voice of reason makes people feel more at ease, because there's people that won't speak up. And when you become a voice of reason, you put a whole lot of other people at ease, and they're happy that you did that because they don't feel that, or they didn't feel brave enough to do it. And there's just a lot of things you can do. If something is feeling overwhelming, I think you can just excuse yourself. But there's nothing wrong with that. You can do it in a polite, professional way too.
Do you have any suggestions for wording that? I know that's not something that a lot of us have a lot of experience doing.
As far as excusing yourself,
Yes.
well, I think, you can do that in a professional way. I think you can just say, excuse me, I have to, I'm going to have to leave the discussion, because I need, I have to work or go to class or whatever. And, I think it's just perfectly fine to excuse yourself that way. I don't see that it has to be anything really evolved. When I excuse myself, I just say, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to leave the discussion now. I have to teach class or go to, whatever I have to do, take care of personal business." And I look forward to further discussions. And I think sometimes it's okay to say, I would like to possibly see this, change to a more positive light, and hopefully these differences can be resolved. I'd like to join the conversation again when we can talk more positively about the subject. I think that's fine. And then just excuse yourself. I don't think that's a bad thing, and I don't see where anybody can really fault you for that. I think once you do that, it just helps other people be strong enough to speak up. You don't have to put people down. because it's not a put down. You're just being honest. You can express that you would love to join the conversation again another time when things can be discussed without any anger. Because we all have our differences and we all have our opinions.
Excellent. Another thing that I've had on the brain, since I heard you talking about this all those years ago was after that I started thinking twice before I joined a discussion. So I used to be one of those people who would always comment in a blog post. I'd always comment on a forum thing I was interested in or had something to say. And I started asking myself before I start typing the comment, why am I doing this? What am I going to get
right
out of this? What am I hoping to happen because of this? And a good 2/3 of the time that would keep me from writing the comment. And then I would ask myself the same thing again before I'd submit it. And then about half the time, I still wouldn't send this thing I had just typed out. I found that not sending it at the last minute paid off more because that's when I got stuck in the discussion.
Exactly.
It wasn't the time that I was writing that I was saving that was so important. It was the not getting sucked into it. So I don't remember if that was a suggestion of yours or not, but I still owe it to you. So thanks.
Oh, that's a huge thing that I tell people. Don't even get sucked in the first place. If you find yourself in a discussion that is turning negative and there's a lot of anger, you can excuse yourself politely, and you can just say, I'd love to join the discussion again at another time. But the best thing to do is not to get sucked in and waste your time. You've got to choose your battles wisely. What are you going to get out of it if you get into this discussion? It's going to take your time. It's going to be draining. It's going to take your energy. And when you have better things to do. I mean, we all have better things to do. So I think you really do have to think before you jump into it and have to be in that awkward position of excusing yourself. What are you going to get out of it? Why are you jumping in? And if you think that before, like you say, you're probably not going to submit a comment and you're not going to get sucked in. We all have better things to do, and we don't need that kind of draining energy. It just starts to drain you. This is where how I started this in the first place, as I said in the beginning. It would exhaust me. It's draining, and it's not a good feeling. So why put yourself there? I'm not saying that we don't want to be doormats or not have a voice or something like that, or anything like that. We just have to choose our battles wisely. Why is it so important? What is it going to do for you? How is this going to make you a better dancer? How is this going to improve your classes or your dancing or your jobs, your gigs? What is this going to do for you? And as you said, when you think it through, you're not even going to get sucked in. And that's the best thing to do.
All right. Now, another one of the things that we talked about a little bit as we were talking about what we might want to cover in this call is the idea of awakening your inner dancer. So who is our inner dancer exactly?
Our inner dancer, to me, it's who we become when we let go of the fear of being ourselves. It's when we accept who we are and that we are valuable individuals in our dance journey and in our everyday lives. I think that takes a certain amount of courage and soul searching. I think it's a process we go through, and I think when we finally start to value, who we are as dancers and creative people, I think that's when we can start to kind of unleash this inner dancer that we create. We've created her. But you have to let her out. You have to really believe in yourself.
And what can we, how can we make that happen?
I think, first of all, we have to stop the negative self-talk. You know, we all do it. We have these toxic kind of judgy thoughts in our head. And we have to turn that around. We have to start saying really nice things to ourselves. We got to make that a habit that we do every day. I think it's, and you have to believe it. You have to believe what you're saying. And the biggest thing, as we were just talking about, you have to stay away from situations that waste your time and keep you from being productive in your dance. Avoiding idle gossip and negative conversations and all these angry people that you know, and these forums and things, just don't waste your time with that. If you can possibly stay away from it, it's a time waster and it's a drain, and it's just that cloud that hangs over our, you know, that kind of hangs over our head, that negativity. It's you have to turn that around and try to keep a clear mind and try to say positive things to yourself. I mean, there's enough problems in our lives and in everyday life. We don't need to create it or go looking for it. And that's my biggest kind of message with the talks that I do and this conversation is we don't need to go looking for it. You know, we have enough trouble. Everybody has enough problems, you know. So I think, first of all, we've got to stop that, the negative self-talk, and try to stay away from negative situations. We need to surround ourselves with more positive people, or more like-minded people that are supportive and who value you, and you value them. I mean, we create that. You know, nothing's perfect, but we can create a better environment for ourselves by choosing who we're around.
Now, in terms of negative self-talk, you know, one of the things that I've really found to be true for me and a lot of the people that I've spoken to is that this is also one of those things. It's not where you flip a switch and everything's suddenly fine because you've decided to stop, you know, engaging in negative self-talk. And so
right.
It definitely still does, you know, keep popping up, albeit less often. You know, what do you recommend to deal with a negative thought when it comes up and to avoid dwelling on it?
I think you have to recognize it. And ask yourself why you're saying that. And ask yourself why you're telling yourself lies. Why would you tell yourself lies like that? Why are you saying mean things to yourself? You have to turn it around. You have to recognize it and ask yourself why you're doing that. And then counteract it with something nice. Write down something positive about yourself. I think that's a lot of power. I like to write. I like pencil and paper. Or if you know, type it on your tablet or whatever, but write some positive things about yourself and read it back to yourself and read it every day. It's another one of those things. It's a conscious effort. It's much easier to be negative than it is to be positive. And if you start to say positive things about yourself, you're going to believe it. You have to get rid of those lies that you're telling yourself. I don't know why we all do it. We want to just berate ourselves. But it's hard to get rid of that. And I think it's just that something that we work at every day. And when you catch yourself doing it, you have to turn it around. Why did I say that? Read your positive thoughts about yourself. Read it out loud and read it over and over again. Make sure you do it every day, even if you do have to write it or if there's just something you memorize every day. But it's hard. It's really hard, but it works. And it's not that switch you can turn on and off, but you can turn that around, and it becomes easier and easier if you create it, if you make it a little habit that you do.
Now, that's actually a great segue into my next question, which is, you know, you've talked a little bit about creating small habits, and this is one of my favorite topics, so I'm so happy you mentioned this. You know, why are habits important in our dance lives?
Well, habits give us structure, discipline. They help us focus on our goals. When we create little habits, like, for instance, a habit of a regular dance practice is, you know, we need that. We need to create these little habits because this takes us closer to our goals in life or in dance. And I think small habits are much easier to practice than big ones. The reason I say the power of creating small habits is because when we try to bite off more than we can chew, that's when we maybe don't follow through, and we kind of drop off. You know, like, oh, I'm going to practice an hour every day. Well, I need to be able to fit that into my life realistically for it to become a daily habit. So maybe it would be more realistic for me to say, I'm going to practice 3 days a week for a half hour. I can always build on it from there if that becomes easy to accomplish. Or maybe I need to cut back on it. Maybe I don't have a half hour 3 days a week. A habit has to be realistic. And I think when we create a little habit that are realistic, we're more likely to do it. And for it to become, we're more likely to practice it for it to become a habit. It's like saying positive things to yourself every day. If I write down just a couple of positive little thoughts and read them every day, that's easy. If I say, oh, I'm going to practice 15 minutes a few times a week, well, maybe that's easy. I can always start building on that. That's why creating small habits are more powerful, because we can be consistent. It's easy to be consistent. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to reach our goals that way.
That also reminds me of something that I read. There's a really great book called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, who's a journalist who collected a lot of research and wrote a really great book. And he has a concept that he calls keystone habits, where sometimes one little tiny habit leads to all kinds of other positive changes. So whether it's, you know, something like just saying some nice things to yourself every day makes it easier for you to show up to practice, which makes you a better dancer, which helps your career. And, you know, these one small change can sometimes lead to something much bigger.
Oh, it's definitely a domino effect. Same with negativity. So you got to choose. It's all about choices. Doing something positive, creating these little positive habits, it definitely has a domino effect. And on the other hand, if you stay more focused on the negative, that has a domino effect in the negative way. So you have to choose, where do you want to be? What kind of habits do you want to create? How do you want to spend your time? Mm-hmm. And it's so important. I totally believe that. That's great.
And are there any specific habits that you'd recommend that dancers cultivate or think about adding to their lives?
Well, I think it's, you know, dance practice, of course. I think trying to be more positive, create a more positive mindset. Try to be kind to yourself. Don't be so hard on yourself with your dancing. It's not productive. I think we can, and be kinder to other dancers. I think it's you know, you should treat other people the way you want to be treated. I think you have to teach people how to be with you. And when you are respectful and are positive, and you don't engage maybe in gossip, or you say kind things and positive things to people and are supportive, I think that comes back to you. these are just small things. Practicing and creating little small habits and practice and being more healthy just in general and in your mind and body. I think these little things just snowball. I think it just, and it rubs off on people. It makes you a better person. And as you say, it's just this, you called it keystone?
Duhigg called it a keystone habit.
Yeah, a keystone habit. I believe that so much, that all these little things, just being a little healthier, practicing, you know, being kinder and being supportive. Be the kind of person you want, however you want to be treated. Be that person to other people. It's just about it's about respect and you know, respecting other people and respecting dancers and respecting yourself and your image in the community. I think these little habits and just being supportive and saying kind things to people, it just has this snowball effect. I think it's just small things that we can get in the habit of that just make our community better.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, in terms of, you know, being a positive force in your dance community, you know, how does our role in the community affect what we can do, whether you're a performer or a student or a teacher or, you know, a troop mate? Does that play out differently in different ways, you know, especially since sometimes there are hierarchies and sometimes there aren't?
I think all of us are role models, whether we're longtime professionals or beginner students. We can all set examples. You know, even if we're a student in a class and just starting out, I think how we conduct ourselves rubs off on other people. I think it makes, you know, just the environment a more positive space. I think teachers are, of course, huge role models. And as teachers or performers, as I was saying before, I think it does boil down to respect, respecting your teachers or teachers respecting their students and the classroom space, and keeping a positive environment and teaching students how to act by your actions. And as a professional, just respect for the stage, for the art, for the culture that the dance comes from. Respecting people, whether it's backstage, as an audience member, we're all role models, whatever our role is in the dance community. And we're all equally important in how we act at events. Our behavior is very important.
And if you're in, you know, a position of leadership, like you're the teacher or the troop director or the event host, and you notice that things are taking a more negative spin, do you have any recommendations for how to, you know, nip that in the bud or put people on a more positive track?
Yeah, that is really tough. Classroom management as a teacher can be difficult sometimes. You have people that are, maybe they don't mean it even, but maybe they don't know how to act in a class. They're too chatty, or they're, you know, constantly disrupting the class somehow. That's kind of hard. That's a very difficult, classroom management is hard. I think you can say things in a professional manner without embarrassing people or making the rest of the class feel very awkward, depending on what the situation is. You can say things in a very, you know, professional, matter-of-fact way to get people back in line, or simply ask them if they continue to disrupt the class, you know, could you please take that outside so we can continue enjoying our class? There are people here to learn. And if you say that professionally or whatever the situation is, I think you don't cause, you know, if you don't get angry or insulting, I think it just can diffuse a situation quicker than if you don't handle it well. So there's different ways that, you know, depending, it's really, there's so many different situations, it's hard to just put your finger on one. But I think you can talk to people reasonably and let them know that certain behavior is not acceptable, and because it helps the people that are subjected to that. You, as an event promoter or a teacher in a classroom, people are relying on you to diffuse a situation or take care of a situation. If you don't take care of it, the rest of the people that are attending that are well behaved feel let down. And that's going to cause more negativity and more maybe chaos or whatever it may be. You need to take care of the situation in a professional manner and as quickly as possible. And I think that can be done, well, hopefully, you know, without any anger or without being insulting or upsetting people. I think others really do appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there's something I'd like to circle back to that you brought up a little bit earlier in the conversation. When we were talking about, you know, stopping negative self-talk, you asked a really great question, which is, you know, can you ask yourself, why are you telling these lies?
Right.
And that's such, you know, such a sharp, like, cut through it kind of question. But I know that when I was in kind of the deepest, darkest version of that for myself, I don't know that I would have trusted that they were lies. I think sometimes I would have felt like I deserved to be talked to that way. And that was not a great thing. And I wonder if you have any advice for people who are feeling that way now.
You have to ask yourself, why do you think you deserve that? Why, and would you say those things to somebody else? The way we talk to ourselves, sometimes we would never say those things to somebody else. Maybe our worst enemy, if we had an enemy. But you have to ask yourself, why do you think you deserve that? It's really something that needs to be addressed. And if you talk to somebody, said those things to somebody else, how would they feel and how would they talk back to you? Why are you talking to yourself like that? Why do you think you deserve that? That's not a good thing. I think that really takes some real soul searching and why would you be so mean to yourself? You know, the thing about dance is, you not only do we love the dance, you have to love yourself in the dance. If we don't love ourselves, how are other people going to love you? How is the audience going to love you? That comes through. You have to get rid of that, and you have to ask yourself why. You have to love yourself. I mean, it's such a beautiful art form. And if you love the art form and it's something that you have given to yourself, it's a big gift to give yourself the gift of dance, the art of dance. Well, you thought you deserved that, so you must think you're a pretty great person because it's such an amazing gift. And if it's something you love so much, you have to love yourself to do it. So you got to do some soul searching. Why do you think you deserve to be talked to in a negative way? I think that's just, it's part of that ongoing process of trying to find ourselves in the dance. Dance brings out, art in general brings out a lot of emotion in us. It's something very powerful. I was talking about that a little earlier in the conversation. It's It's such a powerful thing. It takes so much of our entire being. And it does bring out a lot of stuff. And I think that's something we really have to ask yourself. Why aren't you giving yourself love? You gave yourself this gift of dance, this beautiful, amazing art. You must love yourself. It's something that you have to address, especially as a performer or a teacher, or just a student who wants to, a serious hobbyist even. You've got to love yourself. The dance is so beautiful. That's how is your audience going to love you? How are you going to project yourself as a dancer? You've got to bring that dancer out of yourself. You know, it's really, art is a tricky thing because it does muster up some strange feelings.
And I love that you put that in terms of love, because a lot of us who hold ourselves to these impossible standards and speak off terribly to ourselves would never hold other people to those same. We love people who are flawed. We love people who make mistakes. You know, I don't think any of us can think of an example of somebody who doesn't make mistakes or doesn't have their issues. And we don't withhold that love from other people.
Exactly. Why do we do it to ourselves? Mm-hmm. We expect so much of ourselves. You know, I think it's we can be a little kinder and gentler. Yeah, you're right. A lot of us are perfectionists. And when we don't measure up, we tend to talk to ourselves in a bad way. And that's not good. It's not a good thing. I mean, sometimes we need to give ourselves a good kick in the butt, but you know, you gotta watch how much negative self-talk you're doing and how much you're putting yourself down. That's abuse. You wouldn't do that to somebody else. Don't be abusive to yourself.
All right. Well, Zahra, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you'd like to mention?
I think it's just a subject. Gosh, you could just go on and on about it. It is actually quite complex. It seems like such a simple thing, like let's all be more positive dancers. And the thing is, it's art, and there's nothing perfect about art. It's something we strive for, but art isn't perfect. We're just always striving for that perfection. But that's part of the journey. And it's part of what we love about it. So it's something to kind of, we have to get in perspective and remember why we got into it in the first place. Because it's something we love and it made us feel good. And it's important to try to remember that and hang on to that.
All right. And if people would like to learn more from you, how can they do that?
Well, you can reach me through my website, ZahraZuhair.com, or you can message me on Facebook. Zahra Zuhair Rakshaki or Zahra Zuhair Dance Artist. I have two pages. I have a like page and my regular profile page. So you can message me on Facebook, Instagram. Feel free to call me. My number's on my website. Email me, Zahra@AOL.com, ZAHRA@AOL.com. I love hearing from people, so I love these subjects too. You can go on forever. I think one thing I'd like to say, one of the biggest lessons I think I've learned over the last 40 years is to reiterate what I was saying, is to remember to dance from the very place where I first started. And that's for the love of the dance and not from ego. If you dance from the heart, creativity is going to flow more abundantly, and your overall dance experience is going to be more enjoyable. So sometimes it's hard to let go of the ego and just dance for the love of it and try to remember why we first got into it in the first place. It's a constant reminder. It's those little habits we have to create. It's about constantly reinforcing that every day. And I hope, if anything, from this phone call that people got, you know, kind of learned something and will kind of strive to try to be a more positive dancer in the future.
All right. Well, I think I'd like to open it up to questions from our listeners now. So if you are listening on the webcast and you're not on the phone or Skype, there's a little question box on the right-hand side. So that looks like a little speech bubble, and that will pop open a little panel so you can type in your question over there. If you are on Skype or on the phone, you can press ** on your phone or your Skype keypad, and that will unmute you. I would love to hear if you have any questions for Zahra, or if you have any examples of a negative situation that you'd like help with or that you'd just like some support on. We would love to hear from you. Or your favorite thing that you learned, or the thing that you think you'll have the hardest time implementing. We've got nobody yet. Hi there.
Hi, this is Hava in Oakland, California.
Hi, Hava.
Thank you so much for reinforcing what I'm already practicing and for especially what felt my heart opening when you said you have to love yourself in the dance. And so I'm going to put that on my wall where I practice.
Great.
So I also wanted to say about saying positive things to myself. Sometimes when I'm falling asleep, I try and do a self-love alphabet. A, I'm an artist. B, I'm brave. C, I'm creative. And I had a question. You talked about putting a positive spin to diffuse a negative discussion. Could you give me examples of that? I know you said,
well,
you talked about, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, did you have something specific in mind or?
No, just in general, what you meant by that.
I think sometimes people get into, let's say recently I saw something online, which I did not comment on, was somebody, somehow they felt that this person was disrespecting their teacher who had given them a lot of opportunities to teach workshops and really promoted them. And evidently they took a job or a workshop job that this teacher didn't like. So everybody was saying, oh, she's so disloyal to her teacher, she should just do what her teacher told her. And then other people are arguing, well, she's a professional now and she needs to just make her own decisions and she's free to, you know, teach anywhere she wants. And this discussion just went on and people are just getting angry. And finally, this voice of reason came in and said, you know, this discussion should be between the teacher and the student. It's nobody else's business. We all have our opinions, and yes, we should respect our teachers. And yes, we're free to do the kind of jobs we want to do with whoever we want, but this is a subject between these two people, and it's not something to be, you know, that everybody needs to get involved in. And we all just need to be more respectful and mind our own business.
And I thought that was really very, very nice. I thought it was, they weren't taking sides. They just said, why don't we just mind our own business now? Mm-hmm. it's between the two of them, and that should be resolved between the two of them. So why don't we just be more respectful of that and not take sides and not bash anybody? And I thought that was very, very nice. If you were to make a comment, I think that's the kind of comment that is just very neutral, and it's kind of a voice of reason. It's not taking sides, but it just gave a different, shed a different, a more positive light on it in that particular situation. I wouldn't jump into the conversation at all. You just don't, because some people would jump in and somebody would bash them and, no, you're wrong, and, you know, and that's what starts arguments. And really, it's nobody's business to get involved in those things. And that, I thought this person was very smart in kind of relaying that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't done from anger or you know, putting anybody down. Just, wow, that should just be between the two of them. Why are we discussing this?
Okay, thank you for that example.
Did you have any other ideas, like examples of situations? Sometimes people just say something bad about somebody, and I will go out of my way to say something nice. And, you know, oh, that person, or find something positive about that person, and then I'll just change the subject. Mm-hmm. It's just a way to diffuse things and just kind of become the voice of reason and kind of come from a neutral place.
Thank you.
Thanks, sure. Alva. That was a good question. Do you have any more?
Not at the moment.
All right. Well, I'll put you back on mute, but if you think of anything later, you can unmute yourself. And if anybody else would like to ask a question or bring up an example or share their favorite thing that they learned, I would love to hear from you. Again, that's ** to unmute yourself. Last call.
Did we answer all your questions?
All right, we've got a caller possibly in Pennsylvania. Hi there. Okay, I see that somebody's unmuted, but I'm not hearing anything yet. So I'm going to remute you and unmute you again just in case. Let's see. All right, are you still there? If you're here on the 484 number, if you'd like to type in your question on the chat box, that would work too. I'm not sure why we can't hear you. Is it possible that your phone is muted?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we've got you.
Okay. Hello. Hi, ladies. It's Mariana. I'm here on the East Coast in Philadelphia.
Hi, Mariana.
Hi. Hi. My question was about what you mentioned in the beginning, which my mother agrees with 100%, that social media can be such a waste of our time. And as you noted, most of us don't have time to waste. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on the positive uses of social media as, say, a professional dancer to manage their website, upload their own videos to YouTube, as well as keeping contact with their community, but also not lose time just getting sucked into the vortex.
You know, what I do is I set a timer, and I allow myself, of course, it's a lot of work when you're promoting classes or, you know, whatever you have to do to promote your business. But it's just so easy, as we were saying, to go down that rabbit hole. But I set a timer, and I allow myself so much time, and I have certain days a week that I'm on social media. It's really, really hard to not get sucked in. And that's another habit that I think is important to create, because I'm not saying I don't get sucked in, because I do. It's just really, really hard. But I have a habit of setting a timer and being very, very aware of how much time I'm spending. And it really has helped me. And it's just a hard thing to do. But there's just so many more important things that we should be doing. And, from my perspective, starting in dance way before the internet, I used to get a lot more done. But it's just, we have all these distractions these days. And I think we have to choose what we want our distractions to be. And I would rather, be painting my nails or doing something, more that I need to be doing. I always say, oh, I never have time to do my nails. My hair is a mess. I need to have my hair colored. And if I don't spend all that time getting sucked in, I have more time. It's amazing how that can suck your time away.
If I can
to set a timer, it really does. Yeah, it really does help to set a timer.
It's a great idea.
I actually have another tip I'd like to share too, and that's that if you're using social media for business purpose specifically, and you have things that you want that you know you have to send out, like announcements and that kind of thing, what I often do is I use a program called Hootsuite. There are several other services that are like that. And one of the things that it does is it lets you schedule stuff in advance. And so if I know I have a certain number of things that I need to send out, what I'll do is I'll do those all at once in the scheduler. And so I never actually have to go to Facebook or to Twitter and see, all the stuff that's going on. And that's when I get sucked in. So I can kind of put it in place first.
That's really great.
And sometimes if I know I don't have the time to get sucked in, but I have to put something in right away, I'll still do it in Hootsuite, even though I don't need to schedule it, just so that I don't actually see the stuff that's there.
That's amazing. I do that with my like page on Facebook. I schedule things like a couple of weeks in advance, so I don't even have to go on it. You can do that on a business page on Facebook also. You can just schedule, things for any time you want, and you don't even have to go on there. So that's great. Hootsuite, that's another good one.
Yep, and I know there are several other services, but I can't remember what any of them are called right now.
It does help, if you can be more disciplined about that type of thing, because it's just so easy to go down that rabbit hole and not get out.
Oh, yeah. All right, Mariana, that was a good question. Did you have any more or anything else that you wanted to share?
On a different subject, when you were talking about how YouTube is such a great tool that dancers can use, teachers can use, but it also kind of toes the line of some dancers, some anyone really, just wanting to be that dancer or copy those moves. As a teacher, do you see that more with beginner students that are just so excited to learn and it's also new and there's just so many influences? Or do you see it with more experienced dancers that are maybe just way too focused on being a cookie cutter instead of just embracing the journey?
I see it more with dancers who are more experienced that are already performing. I see it in dance events, different dance, local dance events. I see it on when people post YouTube videos of themselves. It's like, oh my gosh, they're copying such and such dancer. I see. This is not something new. It's more common now that we have, because of social media and because of YouTube, and everything's on YouTube. Even when I was a younger dancer and VHS first came out, and videos of Soher Zeki and Nagwa Fuad and Fifi Abdu, people started emulating those dancers, thinking they were being very Egyptian. And it's hard a lot of times for dancers to distinguish from being in the Egyptian style from copying the personality quirks and postural quirks of an Egyptian star. And it's very hard for people to distinguish that. It's hard for beginners. Beginners tend to emulate their teachers more, and that's a normal process, I think. But then dancers that are already performing that want to be fabulous, they think they're being fabulous by copying a fabulous star. But what they're doing is just doing an impersonation of somebody. And it's hard to get that across to people, to not copy people, be inspired and inspired by their dancing, and maybe take some ideas and put it into your own ideas, or, you know, put it into your own style. But I think a lot of people, I think it's part of that comparison thing that people are afraid to be their self. They compare themselves to other people, and I think if they think they're copying, that they're being fabulous and they're being a really good dancer. It's really a very fine line. It's hard. It's hard to get that across to people, to not copy. But it's hard to know what's in people's heads or why they do it. Is it part of the comparison thing? They don't feel that they have their own voice in the dance, that they haven't developed their own style or personality, or that they think that's just making them like really fabulous by copying the star. And the joke is, these stars go out of their way to be unique. They don't want to be like each other. They develop their own unique style to stand out. That's why they're stars. So it's really funny to me when people copy other people.
All right, Mariana, did we answer your question? And by we, I mean Zahra.
did I answer your question? Or
it was just more of what you see as a teacher, and, you know, just your perspective. That was great.
Oh yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's hard to know what motivates people to kind of do that copycat thing. But I guess it's because so many people study YouTube instead of going to classes. And a lot of people use it to learn. You can learn a lot from it, but it's hard to kind of, there's that gray area there, and there's that fine line between being inspired or copying people and being kind of a carbon copy of somebody else. And I see so many people just doing the same, emulating the same dancers. It's kind of funny.
All right. Thanks, Mariana. Was there anything else you wanted to ask or to say?
That's it. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. If anybody else would like to ask a question or share something, you can press star star to unmute yourself. All right. I think that might be it for tonight then. Well, thank you so much, Zahra.
Thank you so much. It was so great to talk to you again.
I agree. And, you know, I think I got even more out of it this time.
Oh, I'm so glad. It's a fun subject. If you can go on and on with it forever. I really appreciate you having me. I love talking about it.
All right. And thank you, everybody, for coming. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. We've got a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse listeners. That is only open to dancers, so it is a private group. So I'll send you an email shortly that'll have an invitation. But once you ask to join, there will be a delay before I can approve you, just because I have to check you out and make sure that you are a dancer and keep that a safe space. That email will also include a link to the call recording, as well as a link to Zahra's website. Also have a feedback survey that you can use if you'd like to suggest any topics or speakers or other ways that I can improve the call. And mark your calendars for the next call, which is on Tuesday, December 13th. And my guest, Heba of Vancouver, is going to talk to us about cultural appropriation. So we're going to talk about why that's something we need to be concerned with, and also how we can make sure that we're participating, not appropriating. So I'd also like to tell you a little bit about what's going on in the Belly Dance Geek world. I'm going to be opening up registration very soon for my online course, How to Build a Sustainable Practice Habit. And I did not bring up habits on this call to pitch that. I was really amused that Zahra brought that up. But that is a 9-week course that we do online. It's going to start in January, and we are going to build up from a daily habit of 2 minutes of practice up to an hour or whatever your personal goal is. And so if that's something that you're interested in, you can check it out and join the waiting list at bellydancegeek.com/practice-habit. And the last thing that I'd like to say is that this is the come on in kind of clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know anybody who'd like to join us, you can invite them to do that at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. For more Geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.